This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Bernstein and Harrison.
Make it sexy.
It's going to be a day. It's not just Layla. It's not just Marshall Harrison here. Holding it down for the departed Dan Bernstein, who will be back tomorrow.
Wait, the departed? He's not dead.
No, but like, he'll be back. Like,
Rickon killed him,
but he'll be back. We're going to hate his jersey and the respective dugout.
His jersey in the dugout like this.
I really miss Dan, okay? That's the lesson you need to take away from this.
This guy here is dead.
Cross him off then.
He's going to get optioned to the Orioles AAA team after the season ends.
That is the voice of...
And then they're going to get swept by the Royals.
I'm not in a car. I'm on foot. Traversing this great city while we still have traversable days.
Marshall is outside.
I'm outside. Not outside like that. See, I want to make sure people understand. Those days are behind me. I'm inside.
I'm lying for you today. I'm not going to do it.
What do you mean?
You can say
lying
words,
for me?
And those words can be on a microphone, but I'm not corroborating this.
Catch me outside. How about that?
Everyone remember, bad football is still football. I hate people complaining about bad football. It's football.
The numbers...
You know what happens in those 4 or 5 months we don't get football? There's no football, and it sucks.
Studs, the text line thinks you're an addict of football.
Yeah.
There's no denying that.
I feel like I've done my job
here.
Were
we debating that? I thought people knew that.
I love guys who like football. And guys who like football, they like me back. And I like them back. And even guys that don't like football, I mean, they try to avoid me because I'm always trying to get them to like football more.
The Bernstein and Harris Show. Middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Happy Friday indeed as we broadcast live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Our Football Friday is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric, and presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT, It's Not a Game, Illinois.com. Bernstein and Harris with you between now and 2 o'clock.
Alive and well.
Yeah, like, where are you?
Listen, man.
You're killing me? You're killing me.
I mean, I didn't call you Smalls. We're good.
Killing me. All right, I didn't know that. I didn't know that I stared down my own death yesterday. It was a very non-traditional Jewish New Year that we spent here at the Assumption Church in River North for an absolutely gorgeous funeral mass. Absolutely beautiful. So it was in memory of most Chicagoans, a Chicago institution who helped create and continue a Chicago institution in Club Jean and Giorgetti. Tony Derpetti is just a dear soul, a wonderful man. And this, what was said about him yesterday, even the homily by Monsignor Velo was fabulous. The music was everything from a Puccini soprano arias to Paul Anka, My Way, to an end with a full gospel choir singing Bill Withers' Lean on Me. It was...
That is variety.
Oh, it was... Well, and Becca Kaufman directed the music, and she's brilliant. And it was, I mean, full strings, and I mean...
So
really,
a celebration of life in the truest sense.
And just gorgeous. I mean, just so many things about it. And the, you know, they read a letter from Senator Durbin. They read a letter from Brandon Johnson. Even the Italian consul general had some lovely things to say. You know, there are the Lombardi family, the owners of Gibson's were there. Even though this was, you know, a long time competitor for years,
paying respects,
and to see everybody there, it was sad, but I can't imagine that kind of memorial service being as uplifting and as celebratory of a really, really special person as that was. So I was glad to be a part of it.
Glad you were able to take that in and appreciate it, and the gatherings that happen at Hallmark celebrations like that, whether it's funeral, wedding, birth, baptism, like you don't want to miss moments in life.
No, and that's the sad thing too, is that you want that to have all that before you're dead.
Yes.
You know?
Well, that's also a great point.
It would be really nice to say, you know, get everybody together. You know, you say all these nice things and you hear all these wonderful things and you're not there to enjoy it.
In the last decade or so, the whole idea of giving someone their flowers while they're still with us and can appreciate it has really kind of, I think, been a big part of society has embraced that and
good.
Chosen to roll with it.
Good. They should absolutely do that. So yeah, that was That was my day yesterday. So it was not my own funeral, but I was involved in one, even though you guys were trying to kill me.
No one's. I got a little carried away. Okay, I got carried away. I missed you. I was like, okay, Dan and I started this show on Monday. It's Thursday. 4 days later, he's not here.
Yeah, 4 days later, he's dead.
But look who's back.
Back again.
Guess who's back? Yes.
Tell
exactly.
A friend.
I'll tell the guys behind the glass.
Is this another 100% Bears loss avoidance week? Because it seems like this is the trend here.
Define loss avoidance, and I will answer your question thoroughly.
It's one thing to say must win. It's a must not lose. Because all hell's going to break loose if they lose to this crap-ass team at home.
You're talking about when you say all hell's going to break loose. You're speaking on your seat on Monday. That's what's going to happen.
Well, I just mean in general, like when we're sort of looking at each other, giving the side eye during the game, like, is this really happening? Are they down 10? This team sucks.
Okay.
And the Bears should, if they have any designs at all on being good, this is a game that you win because you're just better at football than
I think you answered the question right there when you said if they have any designs on being good. What you're saying when you say that is that you don't know if they're good or not, and here's a chance to prove that they're not bad because they're playing a bad team. So winning the game doesn't really prove anything except for we're not as bad as the Panthers.
Right.
That's
all you need in this league, though.
To a degree. In terms of trying to get to the playoffs, yes. Now, once you get to the playoffs, that's a different standard that you're talking about. But plenty of slightly above average teams have made the playoffs, and more teams make the playoffs now than any time in previous NFL history. Mm-hmm. So you take those two things together. Sometimes you just need to out-survive people.
Yeah. It used to be the thing in college football. Pre-playoff, it always bugged me about college football. It was just avoiding losses. And you could find yourself in the national championship
game. Which is why you schedule FCS teams. Most conferences had to put a thing in their rules where, yeah, you're going to play another Power 5 team in your non-conference schedule. Otherwise, everybody would be playing the cupcakes of the world.
And this is a cupcake. And there are more to come. Plus, you have the all of the variants involved in next week. The London trip makes things weird.
Fair.
And even though the Bears are better, we know it's true what happens to your body clock and everything that the gamblers seem to understand about these games. So next week, anything can happen.
I don't think the Bears are decidedly better than either of these two teams.
I do think they're decidedly better than this team. This week they are. I think that. I think they should win this game by 10.
Can I remind you of how you spoke, how we all spoke about Matt Eberflus's coaching just a couple of games ago?
Mm-hmm. It was bad.
So
bad coaching.
I don't think he's done a consistently good enough job as a head coach for me to just be like, the coaching can't mess this up.
Oh, I know it can, but the margin for error is much higher when the opposing team has this little talent available.
If Bryce Young was your quarterback, I would be completely on board with you. This is a laugher. Let's all just have a good time, watch it in the background. But I'm going to stick by what I said on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and then Thursday. Andy Dalton is a competent quarterback who, if you don't put pressure on him, he'll make NFL throws. And that can put you in a bind because this team has scored how many points? What's the most? What is the highest number of touchdowns this team has produced so far this season through four games?
Two. Is that right?
It's either two or three. Yeah. Either way you look at it, it's not enough to say.
No, but it should be enough this week. The game of which I'm mindful, the Panthers game that keeps flashing in front of me, was it 06? I think it was the Super Bowl year that Jake Delhomme and the Panthers were a formidable team. They
right.
were much better than this outfit. But they were a formidable team, and I want to say Nathan Vasher picked off Jake Delhomme twice early. And they just then beat the absolute bejesus out of that guy. And there was a picture on the front page of the Tribune of Adewale Ogunle standing, looming over Jake Delhomme as he's lying there. And they pretty much checked out.
So they pressured the quarterback.
They started out by just picking him off a couple times. But he knew it was going to be a long day. Like when Mark Sanchez was telling us about what...
He sounded like a man who was seeing ghosts when Mark Sanchez was describing mm-hmm. defensive coordinators and how sick and twisted they are. And they just want it... They, they don't sleep because they're thinking of new ways to cause pain to quarterbacks and disrupt offenses.
They just want to ruin your life.
Yeah, that's literally what he said.
And I mentioned Greg Williams, and he's like, yeah, well, they had me spinning in all different directions. He said, I was terrible. I didn't know where anything was coming from.
So I like your point, right, as you flash back to nostalgia of quarterbacks who are looking up at guys standing over them. On this team, through four games, the pressure has not been as consistent as I would like to see.
No, it hasn't.
So that's another thing. If you don't put the pressure, then now the secondary's running around and for longer than they should, and now guys are getting open and making gains. You act like you didn't watch that game last week where Tutu Atwell and company were just on multiple occasions catching the ball with about 8 yards of space on any side of them, 360.
The open spots in this defense are not a secret.
Exactly.
Can you get there, and is your quarterback upright to make that throw? Is he throwing from the proper launch point, or is he chased out? But the way this defense works is I know that that's part and parcel of running the defense that they do. There are going to be some completions against deep zones down the field. That those are the open spots. It just can't happen all the time. And if you are making them take enough plays to drive it down the field, get the ball out.
My point is it hasn't happened any of the time or hardly any of the time for the Bears offense. So I'm saying if you get into a situation where you give up a big play or two, that's problematic. Also, remember, Chuba Hubbard has been running the football. And the Bears, the last couple of weeks, have had some issues tackling and stopping the run. So it's a pick-your-poison thing. We know that they're pass defense is better than it was last year. Their run defense isn't as stout as it was last year. Certainly things that they want to clean up, but just like I pointed out before that Colts game, hey, the other guys get paid too, and they're scheming and trying and doing everything in their power, and we'll see how it plays out. Do I think the Bears should win? Absolutely. Will I be surprised if they lose? Only moderately.
The thing about Chuba Hubbard, too, is you've got to make sure that your angles and your leverage are really solid against him. He has outstanding contact balance. You know, some of the runs you see, you know, watch David Montgomery. Did you see what he did to Devin Witherspoon? Did you
see
that?
Monday?
Did you see that play? I hadn't seen it, and somebody showed it to me. It's like it's one thing when you see somebody truck somebody, a running back, just blast a defensive back. This was Witherspoon coming downhill. Right at him, full speed, and Montgomery lowers himself and just leans enough that he trucks him, but it's not violent. It's almost like Witherspoon just hit a wall. It looked like he hit a wall and fell over. I didn't know how he got up. Hubbard is very strong on his feet, and I know they say the hits principle, rally to the ball, gang tackle, first guy secure the tackle, second guy try to attack the football. They've got to be super disciplined against him because he is looking for yards after contact.
You know how they take him out of the game? Get up by double digits early.
Sure.
Oh, because that's what they have a history of doing, is scoring a lot of points early in the four games we've seen Shane Walker.
They haven't played a defense this bad yet.
Okay. All right.
I'm saying it's doable. It's doable against this team. You can get up early on this team.
I want first play from scrimmage, play action, skinny post, touchdown.
Oh, you want the
touchdown.
Goods.
Yeah.
That's Rome on that?
This is the team to do it against. Yeah. They cannot pressure the quarterback.
Right.
So Caleb should have time. Especially because when I saw this yesterday, I was like, wait, what? They had a number of guys on the injury report on Wednesday. They had four more guys not practicing on Thursday, bringing the total to 19 guys on the injury report.
That's a lot of guys.
Like, so to bolster your point, Dan, the level of disaster if they lose this game.
That's what I keep saying. Whatever happens, just don't lose. If whatever the scoreboard says after the game, as long as you have one more point than they've got and you can get out of there and get on with that London trip. Think about the misery of traveling to London having lost to these jamokes.
My pause is always this. If the team you're playing can have the same record as you, if they beat you, then you probably should take note of that team. And that's the case here.
He He's Marshall Harris. I'm Dan Bernstein here on the Bernstein and Harris Show. Ray Diaz is our executive producer. Adam Studzinski, our associate producer and sound man. Brandon Fryer helping out. Connor O'Donnell as well. When we come back, let's hear what the recently embattled, perhaps less so now, Shane Waldron has to say about the improvement of his quarterback and how they can finally try to get off to a fast start. That's next on the show.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Score.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris. Middays 10 till 2.
I don't know if that's the case. I think throughout these past couple weeks, or 4 weeks, I guess, I've been getting more comfy at just, getting back into the flow of playing football. Getting back in the flow of getting up there, making checks, you know, taking a few hits, all of that. I think the biggest thing is just myself, just getting back into the flow. It's a new everything for me, being here. And so getting to the flow, making sure I'm, you know, Shane and I on the same page, that when he calls a play and we have alerts and things like that, that we're on the same page. So, I think that's the biggest thing.
You know who that is. If he's using the word comfy, chances are that's your quarterback. That's Caleb Williams. This segment brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. And yes, Twitchers and texters, Marshall's shirt is what you think it is.
Oh, did somebody say something?
Yeah. Somebody noticed that. Somebody zoomed in on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670.
I mean, I pay homage to the classics, you know? Things from my youth are the things that keep me young when I remember them. Because let me tell you, being an old curmudgeon is not it.
So it's a t-shirt, if you can't see it, and it has a graphic of what looks like a "Hello, my name is" name tag sticker. And then written in Sharpie under "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya." And obviously you can fill in the rest from there.
Yeah, you killed my father. Prepare to die.
Prepare to die. Stop saying that.
Six finger men, beware.
It's Count Rugen.
Although not ones that maybe saved games recently in the city. They're
Antonio Alfonseca.
Yeah, he's safe.
Making sure you're talking about one.
Hold on, yes, guys. Ray just told me he's never seen that movie.
I've seen the movie, but it's been like a long time, and I never actually sat down and watched it in its entirety. Oh. Yeah, I'll admit that.
Oh, it's okay.
And I have an assignment this weekend.
I had to explain the reference to him. I'm like, are you serious?
I was like,
it's fine.
Look,
the thing about like references. I have I got a shirt that I'm gonna wear on Monday, and I've got two shirts, and like which one I wear depends on the outcome of this Bears game. So,
yeah.
I like that.
Interesting. Is this sort of like what Warren Buffett does every morning when he gets his... Have you heard this story?
I can tell you this. Nothing I do is like what Warren Buffett does.
No, that's not true. When Warren Buffett gets his McDonald's drive-through breakfast in Omaha every day, he if the market went up, he gets one breakfast. And if the market went down, he gets a less expensive one. It's just one of his little things every day. And he usually pays with cash and change.
Like he doesn't supersize his drink or his hash browns?
That's his thing.
That's hilarious.
It's absolutely true.
If they win, I'll get the big breakfast with the pancakes, the eggs, and the biscuit and the sausage. If they lose, I'll just get a sausage biscuit, a sausage McMuffin, and call it a day.
I loved the big breakfast back in the day. I didn't
even know if they still have it. That thing used to be $1.99. What you talking about?
I used to get it when I worked at Channel 2. And on McClurg, I don't even know if there's the McDonald's. It was still right across the street from the entrance on McClurg. And every day before work in summer 89, I would get the big breakfast for breakfast. And then I would get a quarter pounder with cheese, six nuggets, and a large fry for lunch.
And you're still with us?
Every day.
And you look like you're in pretty good health.
I'll find out more later today. Let me get back to you on that.
It really is in the genes, guys. You can't outrun your genes, and your genes might save you.
The other important thing to remember is that Princess Bride is a Bears movie. Because Fred Savage is a Chicago kid.
He's wearing a Bears jersey.
He's wearing a Bears jersey with the GSH, George Halas Memorial letters on it. And behind him is not only a Cubs pennant, but the fridge poster.
Right.
So the other reason, Ray, where you have to see it is because it's a rite of passage as a Bears fan because
you got that, Ray?
Because the sick kid at home is a Bears fan.
Hey, I'm an Andre. I grew up a wrestling fan. I'm an Andre the Giant fan. I'm very aware of the movie. As a matter of fact, I just watched last weekend the new Vince McMahon documentary. Mm. And there is a mention of the movie. Vince McMahon went to the set to talk to Andre the Giant to convince him to come back on the set of The Princess Bride.
To come back to wrestling?
Because he was so hurt, he wanted to do the movie and cash out and be done. And Vince McMahon wanted him to come back to wrestle Hulk Hogan, so he went to the set of The Princess Bride in the UK, right? In the UK?
Uh-huh.
And he convinced him to get the back surgery needed to make the return to wrestling, to come back to make this big return against Hulk Hogan.
He
convinced him.
I've never heard that story. See, Ray hasn't even seen the movie, but he's got nuggets from The Princess Bride.
I've heard the story of the day the Beaujolais Nouveau came out. And they were filming. They couldn't put Andre the Giant on a horse. And the scenes when he was on a horse, he was suspended on steel cables. And they would walk the horse under him because he was too heavy to be on a horse.
Obviously.
So it was in like this airplane hangar or something. And when the Beaujolais Nouveau came out, you know, Et Arrivé, whatever they do, he ordered cases and cases and cases of it. And he was drinking the bottles like they were cans of beer.
Yeah, that's...
He was just opening bottle after bottle after bottle of Beaujolais Gamay and chugging it. And he was singing. And in between takes, they'd walk the horse out. And he would just be suspended swinging in the middle of this airplane hangar. And he was hammered.
That's wild.
And he was singing at the top of his lungs in French or whatever he was singing. And at one point, Rob Reiner walks in as they're trying to get the shot all set up. And he's like, what the hell is going on here? And he looks at his assistant director. He goes, would you tell me again what I do for a living?
We're getting some pushback on that story, that beautiful story that Ray just told to glamorize wrestling. 847 on the text line says, Jim Cornette said Andre didn't get the surgery until after the match with Hogan, so that part was false.
But he did come back to wrestle.
Well, that's the Vince McMahon side of the story, and he could very well be lying.
Vince McMahon mixed up his story? No way.
Or intentionally changed the story? Maybe.
He misremembered. He's
such a stand-up guy, though.
As the great alum from my university, Mississippi State University, once did in front of Congress. He misremembered one Rafael Palmeiro. Sometimes you just forget. It's been a while, so you forget how the story actually goes. But
we'll go with that.
Anyway, it's good. Princess Bride, good. It's one of those movies that everybody should have their kids watch because it's just a fun movie. It's good. And you're right. It is a rite of passage now that I'm remembering everything about Chicago being involved with it because of the, you know, how it was told through Fred Savage's eyes.
So here is what Shane Waldron had to say when asked where Caleb Williams has made the most strides so far.
I think going back to that point, this past week, you know, there was multiple chances here, especially on some of the second and longer situations where, took a nice completion of Rome on a shallow cross where Rome's able to take a 5-yard completion and turn it into a 10-yard gain right there. Another one to Swift, another one to Keenan. So he had different chances there where, along with a couple checkdowns on some play actions, where he did a really good job of staying clean against, whatever defensive front structure was occurring on those plays, getting the ball out of his hand and letting those guys go to work right there. And so then it'll be the next step is, that balance of that versus, when's the time to go down the field with some of the throws.
You know when the time is to go down the field with some of the throws? This week.
Sunday at noon?
This week. This is the time. As soon as that game starts, that's the time. Just start chucking it. Go set a record.
How about going under center and play action from under
center? Sure. However you want to do it, go set a record. And a watchman. This is Shane Waldron.
Wait, we're not. When you said set a record, you didn't mean 53 passes, right?
No, I mean a good record.
Okay.
Whether it's the most yards a quarterback's ever had at a Bears game or his own rookie record, he's already got the rookie record. So go break it. Go have a day. Go have a Mitch Trubisky against the Buccaneers?
Yeah, that was the game. Huh?
I'm with it.
Just had the anniversary of that, like this week.
Yeah, you're allowed, Caleb. Go ahead.
I mean, Trubisky magic. That was the Jeff Joniak coined phrase.
The greenest of green lights.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, you know what? There's not a light. It's a throughway. There is no light.
Just you call it, and if there's some sort of alert and you want to check to something, go put up a 40.
Put 40 points?
Put a 40 burger. Whoa.
The Bears are allowed to score 40 points. It's not against NFL rules. They are allowed to do that.
Hey, what are you guys drinking right now at this hour?
There's
nothing in the NFL rules that says the Bears cannot score 40 points.
You know what y'all's problem is? Y'all been watching too much other football.
Yes!
That's it.
But that's what it's supposed to look like. What am I drinking? I'm drinking Mariano's house brand drip coffee.
Okay, with nothing else.
When he said house, I thought the next thing was going to be whiskey, but it was brand.
No, look.
I like where your heads and your hearts are. My head is one place and my heart, because I feel for you guys. I am empathetic with your struggles as Bears fans.
Don't pity us.
I'm not pitying you.
Yeah, you are.
I'm empathizing.
I'm not looking down my nose.
Yeah, you are. Dan, here's the thing. I want y'all to be happy. What would make you happy this week? What would make you happy? I know I can't keep you happy in perpetuity,
right.
But what would make you happy this week? What would make you happy this? So when I come in here on Monday morning and I walk into that room at 9:15 a.m. for our meeting, mm-hmm. and I see a smile on your face concerning the show and the Bears, what would have had to happen?
If I can just make it to another day with my health. And my family's health.
Take your health out of this.
And Lord willing.
All right, Marshall, I'll answer this question.
Okay, thank you, Studs.
If the Bears give me a stress-free fourth quarter and win the game, I'll walk in here with a huge smile.
Yeah, I'll tell you
this.
If I can start writing my column midway through the fourth, if I can confidently begin writing, knowing there's going to be no stupid screw-ups or surprises, and be like, this one's over.
So if human victory cigar Tyson Bagent enters the game and the Bears have the
bingo.
Lead.
That would be next. I'm not asking for that.
Okay, that's too much?
Just a lead in the fourth quarter where I'm not sweating the game out. Like, not another one possession game in the fourth quarter is what I'm asking for.
Every game has been one.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm asking for not that.
Okay, so you want a two-score win. That's what you're asking for.
Yes.
It's a two-score win.
Yes.
Okay. Is that good enough for you, Dan? A two-score win? A two possession win.
If it looks the way it should in that regard, yeah.
But they, he's getting picky with it.
Because the Bears could find a way to make that look weird, because they're the Bears and they have a unique ability to make things uncomfortable.
Like a late pick six, you were up by four, but a late pick six makes an 11-point win.
Yeah, but if we see the Bagency come in because Caleb's work is done and they put the cape on him and he walks off and he sits down and takes off his shoes.
Is it cold enough for the cape? I guess it is.
And then the Bagency comes in, then we're all good.
Okay, well I wish that for all of you. I'm here to tell you it's probably not going to happen, but I wish that for all of you.
Thank you. Let's hear more from Shane Waldron. And if the offense is going to do what we want it to do, it's going to have to start better than it has in the past. Why has it been so slow in the first half?
It's a great observation, something we actually addressed beginning of this week and moving forward in this week. Really goes back to some of the negative plays we've had in the first halves right there. So just doing a really good job starting with our operations, starting with some of those pre-snap penalties, you know, really eliminating those. Had another drive that started out with a 15-yard penalty. So eliminating the negative plays in the first half so we don't feel like we're playing behind the sticks, which we did a really good job in the second half of eliminating those. Along with the run game, as we start to get that going, those are all things to me that end up leading to a faster start. And knowing that, the attention to detail right from the jump, from a mental aspect, all the stuff that we can eliminate before any physical activity even occurs, is a point of emphasis this week. And I think that, like I said, the guys have done a really good job of addressing those things, talking about those things, and just finding that way to be locked in right from the jump. And so we can have a positive four quarter outcome.
That'd be nice.
Sounds like coaching to me. Remind them as they head out the tunnel. Hey guys, remember all those penalties you commit in the first quarter of games?
Stop.
Stop doing that.
Thanks, coach. Go get them. Good talk.
But, I really do think it's that simple, because sometimes we're like, oh, they made adjustments. The adjustment they made last week is they stopped committing penalties.
That's a good adjustment, though.
Yeah, you're behind the chains every single series, and now you're just playing normal football. It's a lot easier that way.
That one drive, that third quarter drive, is like, oh, you can do it like this without getting in your own way? Yes.
Penalty free, right?
You can do it every time. And like you said, I think your point is well taken too. You don't need to get to third down every time. Like that is
they only had two third downs on that 77-yard drive?
Only two.
Yeah.
So you can have 8 yards on your first carry. You can have a screen pass that goes for 12 yards. You go first down, first down, first down, first down if you want. Like you don't have to pull teeth every time.
You don't
time.
Need to mix in third downs just for the sake of mixing in third downs.
That is a second and two, second and one, that's a great time to run all verts and go ahead. And if he's got to dirt it, he can dirt it.
Which, again, not against NFL rules. That is, you can do that. The Bears are allowed to have second and short.
We are the Bernstein and Harris Show. Coming up next, there was some immensely exciting baseball that was played last night. And I mean, that was an all-timer.
Unless you're Bob Uecker.
That's an all-timer. Well, Bob's in a little different spot than maybe the rest of us are when it comes to some of these opportunities. And it sounded like he knew it. Ouch. So we'll hear that. And we'll also talk about maybe the best manager in baseball now in the Cubs division. That's next on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, The Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Midori third, Nimmo at first. The pitch. Swing and a ball trailed. Right field. Trailing back. At the wall. Out of here. It's out of here. Alonso at opposite field home run. And the Mets have the lead. And here in the ninth, the comeback kids have done it again.
That one had some sting on it.
First, Boog Sciambi on ESPN, and then you heard Bob Uecker closing it out on WTMJ, the Milwaukee Brewers radio call. When you think about the fact that when Pete Alonso stepped into the batter's box as a free agent to be, there were plenty of people thinking this is the last time you are going to see him take a swing in a Mets uniform. That this is his last plate appearance as a Met. Against, other than Emmanuel Clase, the most dominant, and there are ways you can crunch the numbers to argue that Devin Williams is the most dominant reliever. Like, that game's over when he comes in. But for him to make that mistake, to miss that location to that guy at that time in that way is why we watch baseball games.
And, you know, I was watching the John Boy video on this because he thought the pitches were being tipped, but control was not there. He wasn't. If you throw enough balls, and they had seen obviously this guy a numerous times in the last couple of weeks. So you add all that factor that in. This was building, kind of percolating to a moment such as this. And, man, that's what playoff baseball is all about.
And it wasn't one of the – it's not when we think about great playoff homers. Obviously, we think about Reggie Jackson, or we think about
– Bobby Thompson.
Batista.
Oh, Batista.
Jose Bautista, the famous bat flip home run.
The flip of all flips.
Probably the second, like – my second favorite home run of all time is that Bautista home run. It's
just because of the theatrics involved.
Every time I watch the call of it, the bat flip, everything about it is just perfect. And of course, the greatest home run of all time is Bartolo Colon. One home run he hit.
Okay, that's fun, but
it's the greatest home run I've ever seen in my
Canerco's
life.
I like Carter against
Joe Carter.
Yeah, against Mitch Williams.
You know what the thing is about that 05 season, the Canerco Grand Slam. Not even my as a former White Sox fan, I was a big Sox fan back then.
Wow.
As a big White Sox fan back then,
yeah.
Still not my favorite home run from that season. That season, the best home run I saw was Albert Pujols against the Astros in the NLCS.
Oh, Brad Lynch. Brad Lynch.
Yes.
That thing hasn't landed.
Yeah. The ball that still has, like, I vividly remember watching that and just saying, oh my God.
Yeah. It was powdered.
I also like Kirby Puckett when the Twins beat the Braves. He sent it to a game 7
mm-hmm.
with the walk-off. See you tomorrow night. I like that one too. The home run in baseball. Baseball and the home run, those are two things. Who didn't grow up, you know, imagining themselves hitting a walk-off home run?
For me, it was Reggie's third.
Oh, okay.
In the World Series game, the one off of Charlie Huff.
Okay.
Because that's a knuckleball. He'd already hit two. And then he throws this 60-mile-an-hour flutter ball, and Reggie hits it, what, 470? Whatever it is to that, the painted
batter's eye. It was a long way. It was a long way.
And that, you talk about larger than life when you're a kid, like a superhero. Like, I thought he was like Spider-Man or something. Like, that's not a real person, because you're not supposed to be able to do that. And like down on one knee and the huge finish to it. Ah, but Pete Alonso is going to be, that is an all-time famous home run. I want to hear, we have the Mets radio call and we have the Euchre call of that on TMJ of just the home run. So what are we going to hear first?
Which would you like to hear first? Do you want to hear the joyous one?
No, let's hear the sad one. Let's hear the sad
Euchre,
one.
Man. Okay. He'll make you cry.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Bob Euchre.
Alonso stepping out momentarily. Now back in there. Williams. Three balls on a strike. And the pitch. Hit in the air to right. Deep warning track and gone. Peter Alonso just put New York on top in this one with a three-run home run to right field. And just like that, a 2-0 lead is now a 3-2 deficit.
You can actually pinpoint the second when his heart rips in half. And now.
Yeah, you could actually. If you play that,
his voice cracks, like, or well, is near crack.
I think it's the way he says, like, deep to the word right, I believe. You play it again.
Alonso stepping out momentarily. Now back in there. Williams. Three balls on a strike. And the pitch. Hit in the air to right.
There it is.
Warning track and gone.
Yeah, that's it. It hit in the air right. And the way he tails off a little bit is like, oh no.
I think I felt it more and gone. It's like I'm finishing this sentence. I don't want to finish this sentence.
But how about the fact that he's 90?
He's 90.
And he knows that these seasons for him to call Brewers games or these opportunities are dwindling and gone. It kind of feels heavy, doesn't it?
Hey, I like Euchre a lot, and I do feel sad for him. But as a Cubs fan, I'm getting a lot of joy out of this. I am.
That's okay.
I am.
All right. Well,
I just am.
Speaking of joy, let's hear the radio call from the Mets side of things.
Williams sets. Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball to right field. Pretty well hit. Freelick back at the wall. He jumps. It's gone. He did it. He did it. Pete Alonso with the most memorable home run of his career. Pumps his fist as he rounds second. It's a three-run homer. He's given the Mets a 3-2 lead. They all pour out of the dugout. Alonso on his way to home plate. They're waiting for him. He hits the plate. He is first congratulated by Nimmo. Hugged by Lindor. There are a dozen Mets waiting for him outside the dugout. Pete Alonso keeps this fairy tale season going with the fairy tale swing of his career. 3-2 New York.
Howie Rose on WCBS 880 AM.
And the contrast and compare of those two calls is, woo, it's something to be studied.
Yeah, there's something about setting the moment in baseball. There's something about knowing the potential and having all the time to feel the gravity of a given moment and then the exaltation or the misery thereafter.
It was just the level of description if it's the, you know, go-ahead call versus the, I don't need to say that much because you know what this means if your team just saw a 2-0 lead swing the other way, and now they're down 3-2.
Want to quickly mention also that there was news off the field. Terry Francona is going to manage the Reds.
Listen, when I saw this thing break, I was like, uh-oh, for the Cubs and their fans and the rest of the division, because that is a young, upcoming team with a lot of talent. And if anybody can get them where they need to be, Tito would be at the top of said list.
I hope he's okay health-wise.
Right.
Because I know he had a series of problems and he missed a bunch of games, but if it's up to him. He's a grown man at 65, and if he's ready to come back and do this, so there's the Reds are a better team. I also think, too, we always talk about the way that the metric people discuss managerial moves and say, well, one way or another, it's only 2.5 games this or 2.5 games that. And that may be true, I think, in the old way of looking at it for a bench manager, for the guy, this is my clubhouse, I set the lineup, I make those decisions. What we now know is people like Craig Counsell and Terry Francona have a much greater role than what we used to think managers did and do. They do have say in personnel. They do have important sway in the way the organization is run. So I tend to think more of certain managerial hires now than I did. And that's not based on any hard evidence. It's just understanding that the relationship of somebody with the standing of Francona coming into that team, he's going to matter a lot more than just the decision he makes in a game.
And also the players themselves, when you have that resume, that track record, and they want to actually be better, are going to be okay with being managed a little harder, and really their ears are going to perk up at everything you're saying. Fresh voice, always a fresh voice when you get a new manager, but someone with, as you said, that standing, it's going to command the room to a certain degree, that which not everybody will.
Back to the Bears when we return. Brian Baldinger broke down the Bears' offense, and he will discuss next on Sports Radio 670, The Score.